Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Community Is Our Middle Name podcast. My name is Gareth Oliver. Thank you once again for being part of another episode. And we are talking about autism on this episode, with World Autism Understanding Day happening on the 2nd of April. We're talking specifically about the rise of people being diagnosed as autistic or ADHD as adults. And I'm speaking with Erin, who is a person who has been diagnosed as autistic as an adult. And I'm also speaking from some perspective here as well, of being recently diagnosed as ADHD as an adult. There seems to have been a real surge in adults getting diagnosed as neurodiverse, and I thought, what better time to talk about it than now with someone who is living the experience. So here's my conversation with Erin around autism for World Autism Understanding Day. On the Community Is a Middle Name podcast, proudly brought to you by Grampians Community Health, and we are here, of course, for you, your family, and our community. Erin, welcome to the Community Is Our Middle Name podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, not your first time on the podcast, is it?
I think I was on for Movember.
I think you were part of the roundtable. I reckon you were.
Yes, I was. Yeah.
But we're here today and we're going to talk about something that's quite close to my heart and your heart and brain, for both of us. We're talking about autism. Autism World Understanding, let me start that again. World Autism Understanding Day is happening on the 2nd of April. A lot of stuff in the media about people who are adults and getting diagnosed as autistic or with ADHD. And you and I are some of those people, aren't we?
We are. It's definitely an interesting journey.
Yeah, so I've been recently, like within the last 12 months, diagnosed as ADHD. Erin, in a similar time span, has been diagnosed level one autistic. Is that right?
Two.
Level two?
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't have pegged that. So.
No.
How did you come to going and getting a diagnosis? What was the sort of trigger, for lack of a better term, that made you want to go and do it?
It was actually really interesting. It was a friend of mine who is also neurodivergent. She had just kind of made a few observations about some of my behaviour and the way that I liked to do things. And they were very small things, but it got me thinking. So I started doing a lot of research and so many things were coming up and I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But I'd been struggling my whole life with trying to figure out, you know, in a want for a better word, I always used to say, what's wrong with me? And now I know it's what's different about me. And so, you know, I was always searching for something to explain why I did things the way they did things or why I understood things the way I understood them. And so when this kind of came up, I thought, you know what, let's just look into it and explore it as an option. You know, I wasn't 100% sure that it was going to be level two autism, but it turns out that it was, which, you know, kind of puts a bit of a peg in the journey of, okay, well, it's not mental health, so to speak. It's actually something completely different.
Yeah. When you mentioned that, you know, the friend who was neurodivergent, I thought you were talking about me, but that's fine. Whoever that is,
good. You're always a friend, Gareth.
Oh, thank you for being a friend. Travelling down the road and back again, as they say in the classics. Did it answer a lot of questions? Because I know for me, getting my ADHD diagnosis, I can now look back on stuff from when I was a teenager, when I was a kid, when I was at university, when I was in my 20s, and be like, right, now I can check that box as to why I did what I did or why I behaved the way I behaved or I said what I said. Did you find something similar taking part in this journey?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest, and I really struggled with the diagnosis at first because I wondered how different my life would have been if I'd always known. And, you know, maybe I would have understood why sometimes I find it difficult to communicate with people, understand concepts, or to make and keep friends, different things like that. And I wouldn't have, I don't know if I would have had as much self-loathing as well if I had found out earlier and kind of understood that. And so I look back now and I'm, you know, and it's constant because, you know, those memories, you get triggered by memories and things like that. And that constant, oh, yeah, okay, well, that explains why I did that. Or, you know, it makes you realize that you actually don't understand, or you kind of look at something and go, well, that's just, that doesn't make any sense to me. And so, yeah. Yeah, I think it changes everything. And lots of people have said to me, oh, it doesn't change anything. You're still the same person. It changes everything. Every single thing about you is reevaluated, especially when you've spent 31 years living as one person and now you get the permission to live as your true self.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a great point. You know, you in one sense, yes, you still are the same Aaron that people have already known, but in this whole other massive holistic sort of sense, you can now be the what's the word I'm looking for? Authentic version of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had a friend who wasn't me who said to you, maybe you might be, you know, autistic, ADHD, whatever, neurodiverse. Mm. What were your steps from there?
Well, I kind of didn't really go down that path straight away. I went through a really rough time for a little while, and I actually ended up in hospital. And one of the mental health workers that was there actually spoke to me about my symptoms. And this person had actually worked with a lot of people in Melbourne who experienced autism, neurodivergent, had those neurodivergent experiences and things like that. And he actually said to me, you know, I think that with the buildup of symptoms that you're having and the way that you're able to understand me and how I talk to you, I do think that it's worth going down that path of having that assessment. And so he actually gave me a recommendation of a company. And I think, you know, one of the things he did say to me is that it's really important that you do your research around the companies and the organizations that are doing these assessments, because a lot of people will just do them and charge you through the nose for them, because unfortunately there aren't really, for adults especially, there aren't any kind of funding that you can get to get those assessments done. So you do have to pay for them yourself. So, you know, I didn't want to get ripped off and then walk away not knowing anything still. So, you know, I thought getting that recommendation from him was a really good positive thing. And then I just called them and they went through a pre-assessment with me because they wanted to make sure that I was eligible to actually be assessed. They wanted to, you know, their reasoning for that was this is an expensive process and we don't want you to spend that money unless we think that it's worth it. So we went through the pre-assessment and that it wasn't just light and fluffy. There was quite a lot of questions in there about my past and my present and, you know, what brought me to this today, but also what my history had been like as well. And then, you know, we set up that assessment and went through all of that. It's been probably about 6 to 7 months since I was formally diagnosed now. And at the moment I'm applying for NDIS. So, you know, that's kind of been the entire process of it. It hasn't been too overwhelming, which is great.
Yeah, because you do hear from some people that can be really overwhelming, and you're right. Sadly, there is some of those dodgy operators out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and you and I have spoken at length about all this sort of stuff because we were sort of going through something similar at the same time. Mm. You know, almost like on journeys of self-discovery.
Yeah.
Yeah, two shifts in the night, as it were. How has that changed, perhaps, the way that you deal with colleagues, with family and friends, with your partner? Has it changed?
Absolutely. for starters, work, I mean, my ability to do my job hasn't changed. I still do my job the same I did it before because I'd noticed in my life that certain things worked better for me. So, for example, I'm a spreadsheet lover. I have spreadsheets for everything, and that's been one of the things that I've adopted in my work life even before I found out that I was neurodivergent, because that's just what worked for me. So I've really been able to even go further into that and go, okay, well, how can I use these to work even better for me, or how can I use other strategies? In terms of my work colleagues, I think that, you know, it's been really great being in a supportive workplace that actually where people understand and people also are going through it in their own ways as well. And so that has been, you know, a really great thing. And even my program leader, you know, it's given us the ability for her to be able to say, okay, well, this is the best way to communicate with Erin to get the best results, or, you know, this is how I can support her. Obviously, you know, with my partner, it's a whole different world, because when I'm at work, I generally wear that autistic mask. And when I'm at home, I'm a very different person. Obviously, me and my partner are currently going through some support to figure out how best to support me through the journey. But also we're learning. We're learning so many new things about, okay, well, Erin processes this information this way, or you need to be able to, you know, even if we talk about money, we work around money in two different, completely different understandings. And so being able to communicate on either side of that, you know, money is a touchy subject when it comes to being a partner anyway. So, you know, for us, it's all about learning and making sure that we can continue to have the best out of our relationship. So, you know, all I can say really is that this diagnosis has given me the opportunity to be able to learn about myself and how I interact with the world, but to not feel shame and guilt around that as well. And I think that's one of the biggest things, is when you don't know what's going on, you just feel like this outcast and you don't really know where you fit.
Yeah. So, as you know, one of my kids is autistic. And that was one of the reasons that we decided to get her diagnosed early, because when she grows up, when she gets to high school's hard enough for anyone, whether they're neurodiverse or not, and to have some of these questions answered. And you do, we've learned a lot, not just about her, but about ourselves as well. And it's a real eye opener. What do you think, so when you hear people say, no, adults are just getting, because this really annoys me, adults are getting diagnosed with ADHD or autism because it's trendy, that, or it's a superpower. That's the other one that bothers me. What's your take on that?
I mean, at one point in my life, I was, an autistic child as well. I just didn't know. And, you know, you don't just develop autism as an adult. It doesn't work like that, you know. So I was, when I was a child, I was autistic, and I can look back at school reports and link those things in. You know, one of the things my school report said was, Erin is always very quiet. And I would go home and I would show my mum those reports, and she would go, I don't understand this, because they must be seeing a whole different child to what I see. But in that school environment, I was very masked. I was very shut down. I was very closed off. And then I'd go home and I'd be in a comfortable environment where I felt safe and secure in my own skin, and I could let all that down. So, you know, you can see the signs of that now that I'm older, but the only reason we know about those signs is because of the research that's been done and the knowledge that's been gained. A lot of, when I was younger, it was the boys getting diagnosed, because they were the loud ones who nobody knew how to deal with, and they were just there in your face. Generally, most of the time they were, you know, so there was always this need to fix them, so to speak. And the girls were the ones in the back of the classroom who were quiet and not making any noise and went unnoticed. And so, you know, and the research is huge now. Like, they've done so much to study neurodivergent. And I think that it's not necessarily trendy. I think it's just that people are starting to discover that there's something else that isn't necessarily, you know, we're not necessarily the norm, so to speak.
Yeah. It's, you hit on a really good point. Cause I had this when I started getting my ADHD diagnosis. I remember having family tell me that, you're not ADHD. That's the naughty kids, the naughty boys who are bouncing off the walls everywhere. When you're at school, and even when I started working in the disability field, like autism was a thing that was 90% was boys. Very rare for girls to get diagnosed with autism because at the time we didn't realize that it presents so much different in girls than what it does in boys.
Absolutely. Yep. 100%.
Yeah.
And it's almost on the opposite end, really. Like there's so many things that are just completely opposite.
And girls are, seem to be so much better at the masking as well.
Yes. It's one of the things that women tend to be much better at is the masking.
Yeah, so it was definitely, you go back 10, 20, probably even 5 years, and there was just complete one lack of understanding around autism, especially autism in girls, and probably lack of understanding about autism and neurodiversity in general, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's amazing. Like, I mean, if you think about it, I was at school 20 years ago. And if you look at, for example, if you look at how much phones have changed in 20 years, right? I remember having a black and white Nokia phone with Snake on it. And now yes. I have a colored phone with my bank app that I wouldn't know what to do without. If phones can make that much progress over 20 years, what can our research on autism do? So if, you know, it's come a long way, a huge amount of way, and we've learnt and we've seen all of that, and now we're being able to apply that to people in the community, which is great.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're also learning in work environments and school environments now that it's not – that one size fits all simply does not work. I think for so many years – neurodiverse people in particular were meant to be shoehorned into what was expected at school, what was expected in the workplace by the non-neurodiverse community. And it made it so much harder. That's why you had so many rates of burnout. That's probably why so many neurodiverse kids drop out of school early, because they were not given the opportunities to reach their full potential. And I think that's changing, but what do you think?
Look, I think it is in some ways. I still think there's a level of expectation that each person can be expected to – sorry, just trying to figure out how to say, like, there's a certain expectation of how much work somebody can get done, you know. Like, everybody should be able to complete that amount of work. It's not the case. I mean, some days I can sit at my computer and do 3 days of work in one day. Some days I can sit at my computer and do half a day's work. It fluctuates so much. And I think even for non-neurodivergent people, you know, it's the same, but there's still that culture of work, 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 in so many different places. But I do think it's shifting slightly. I think that more people are becoming aware. I just think it needs to be really start being ingrained in that culture of workplaces, but also of capitalism, really. I mean, if you want to go there, you know, I just think the world is built on that thing of let's make as much money as we can. And let's, so that productivity is required to be so high, and it doesn't necessarily take into consideration all of those differences that people have. But in terms of, if I look at my workplace, it's becoming far more understanding of people that are neurodivergent, and we're able to work on that individual level, not necessarily that large group level, but the individual level, I think, is definitely changing.
I would agree with that. I've noticed in my time working here the difference from when I started 5 years ago. I find for me, there's a lot more flexibility. Trying to stay on task for me is often extremely difficult. So I find that for my area, they're pretty understanding of that, and it makes for good outcomes. You mentioned mental health earlier. A lot of depression, anxiety, we now know was misdiagnosed or is tied up with neurodiversity. I know for myself, I had a diagnosis of social anxiety disorder to go with the ADHD on top of all the other stuff that I've had for years, which I now know ties into ADHD. Are you similar? Do you think that you were probably misdiagnosed when you were a bit younger and it tied more into autism spectrum?
Absolutely. I had diagnoses from depression, anxiety, PTSD. They even went so far as to diagnose me with OCD. And none of them felt like they fit right. None of them, you know, they'd say I had OCD, but then, you know, there was things that I'm like, but this doesn't make sense. Like, why would I do this? Or why would I not, you know, why would I not do certain things if I'm diagnosed with these? But I actually, I have secondary diagnosis of social anxiety as well. And I think that comes along with being unsure. And to be quite honest with you, I think if I was diagnosed earlier in my life, maybe I wouldn't have such high anxiety because I wouldn't have had to, I suppose, mask as much in my life, but I also wouldn't have had to pretend to be normal, so to speak. And so that anxiety behind that presenting in one way would have maybe been lessened.
And then days like that you get home, and you get to your little quiet space, and you can almost feel the weight lifting off your shoulders from that, you know, masking and trying to fit in into this neurotypical world that we live in. For you, what's been the most positive thing about this whole experience, other than this podcast?
I now have an excuse to watch the same TV shows on repeat without my partner getting mad and asking me why. I just say it's my autism, which is great because I love it really helps with the lack of anxiety because you know exactly what's coming. Been really good.
Well, you and I talked about this.
We
both are the type of people who we watch a movie, we will look up what happens because we can't handle the waiting and not knowing.
Yeah. I was sitting in the cinema only 2 weeks ago and I got my phone out in the cinema and had to find out what happened because it was just too much. I couldn't deal with it. but probably the best part is that I now can say that I know why I did things the way I did them. I don't blame myself as much anymore. I don't have the shame and the guilt and the overwhelming feeling that something is wrong with me because there's nothing wrong with me. I just think in a different way. And going back to your comment about the superpower before, you know, there are days that I look at it and go, this is not a superpower. This is an absolute crap storm. And how can I function in this world? But then there are days that I'm like, do people see the world like I do? Because if they don't, I kind of pity them a little bit. It's kind of a bit sad. But again, we're all different and we all see the world in a different way, and that's what makes it beautiful.
Well said. And one of the things that I think is great about this is that I can bring my autistic daughter into work and point to you and say, here's a person with autism who is working at the absolute max capacity and doing a fantastic job. So it's great that, you can be a role model for kids like mine.
Absolutely. And I'm happy to be, you know, it's taken me a lot of work to get to where I am, but it's possible and anybody can do it. You know, I know that we technically have a disability under the NDIS, but it doesn't stop you from achieving what you need and what you want to achieve. So that's one of the most important things I like to tell young people.
Well, what I usually do, because, and you've listened to the podcast, and you've probably listened to me do it, I ask people if there's any final messages they want to get out there. So the floor is yours, the virtual floor, because recording is virtually.
I think I'd just like to let people know that, you know, if you're not sure about if you have autism or you are neurodivergent, it's okay. Talk to the doctor, you know, have a chat with your doctor. It's the best place to start. And I think, for any young women who are getting diagnosed with autism or even children, you know, I think it's important to remember that this isn't just who you are. You're not just a disability. You are so much more than that. And don't ever let anybody tell you otherwise.
And that's fantastic.
That's my message.
That's a great message. Yeah, more than just a label, for sure.
Yes, absolutely.
Excellent. Erin, thank you for sharing your journey to diagnosis and to some your self-realization of yourself as not just an autistic person, but from a holistic sense, you as a whole person. Yeah, thank you for coming on the Communities of Mennonite podcast.
You're welcome. It was good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you once again, Erin, for sharing the story of your journey on becoming diagnosed as an adult with autism. It's something we have seen a spike in, but as we spoke about in the podcast, I think there's a lot more understanding around autism and ADHD and other neurodiversities such as dyslexia and dyscalculia nowadays than what there was 5, 10, 15 years ago. So thank you once again, Erin, for being part of this episode. This is episode number 65 of the Community is Our Middle Name podcast, and it is brought to you by Grampians Community Health. And here at Grampians Community Health, we offer a wide range of services across the following local government areas: the West Wimmera Shire, Hindmarsh Shire, Yarriambiack Shire, Bull Oak Shire, Horsham Rural City, Northern Grampian Shire, Southern Grampian Shire, Ararat Rural City, Pyrenees Shire, and Central Goldfields Shire regions. So that's the South Australian border, right across to Mirrabarra, down Hamilton, up into the Mallee, all over the place. We offer the following services. Well, these are some of the services we offer. Alcohol and drug support, carers support, counselling services, family violence support, mental health services, NDIS and disability services, including plan management and NDIS support coordination, aged care services, including home care package, case management, and much, much more. For more information, gch.org.au. That is our website, and that is where you can find out all about GCH. You can follow us on social media as well. We are on Facebook, which is facebook.com/Grampians Community Health, and we're on Snapchat and Instagram as well. At GCH Grampians is the handle for both of those. You can visit us in person at our three main sites in Stawell, Ararat, and Horsham, and give us a call, 5358 7400. Speak to our friendly intake team. They'll be able to get you some help, and our reception staff, they'll be able to point you in the right direction as well. The intro and outro music is an original composition performed by Andrew Parsons, and we use that with his permission and give him our thanks for doing that for us, which is really cool. So thanks, Paso. This podcast was produced and recorded on the traditional lands of the Jabiroong people, and we pay respects to all elders past, present, and emerging, and we extend that respect to all Aboriginal people. There we go. Episode 65. This is it's amazing to me that we've done 65 episodes of the Communities of Mennonite podcast. Fantastic. Thank you for being part of it. Over 4,000 downloads as well, which is really cool. So thank you to everyone who has listened and downloaded or shared and helped spread some of the messages out that we're trying to get out there. My name is Gareth Olver. Thank you once again for being part of the Communities of Mennonite podcast. Here at Grampians Community Health, we wish everyone a fantastic rest of the day. Safe Easter. It is about Easter time here as I'm recording this. And don't forget, Grampians Community Health are here for you, your family, and our community. And on behalf of everyone here at GCH, I'll say until next time. So long.